Can you believe it, Steph? Can you believe that it's been nearly a year?
I can't believe it, Carrie. I really can't.
I'm Carrie. This is Steph. We are My Bloody Horrorcast, and we're back after a long, long, long hiatus.
Yeah, this weird thing happened where we just decided we didn't like horror movies anymore, and so we just didn't watch anything for an entire year.
Mm-hmm.
Just kidding. I think life just kind of came up and...
We've each had some kind of crazy, like really big life stuff going on for both of us individually, and so I think it's kind of, this was a much needed night to come back.
Yeah, we've actually met up a bunch of times and watched horror movies and discussed them. We've not recorded anything.
Nope. And maybe, you know, hopefully we come back and we're new and improved and excited and reinvigorated and all those things.
Carrie, you're so optimistic. I'm just going to say, if we're a little rusty, be kind, because we're coming back.
That's true. So, we have seen a lot of stuff, and already, you know, we're about halfway through the year now. I guess we're a little bit over halfway through the year.
Oh, yeah. We're in August.
I know. So. And there has been some pretty fantastic stuff that's come out already.
I think so, too. And I'm really excited about some other movies that are coming out, but I'm going to hold off on that and... I was thinking if Carrie and I made a whole episode to catch up on everything we'd seen, it would be like a 5-hour podcast.
No one would listen to it. You'd be falling asleep.
Yeah, not even our moms.
They would kick us off every platform that we're on. So we decided we'd start kind of ease back into it. You know, we're in the shallow waters. We're in the kids' pool, in the kiddie pool. You know, we're getting back into it. We'll go to the deep end later.
Yeah, we wanted to talk about like three theatrically released movies.
And very theatric,
yes. But we both saw Us, we both saw Midsummer, and then we screened Climax at Flickr.
Mm-hmm. Which we're going to try to do more, and as we get back to doing episodes, we will talk about some of the screenings so some of our local listeners and friends, it's yet another way you can find out about movies that we're going to be screening and showing at our local bar.
Yeah, if you attend Flickr screenings, which I believe half of our small pool of listeners do.
I'm guessing you already kind of are in the loop, exactly. But there may be that one straggler out there. You just never know.
I know. I mean, if you live in Athens and you're listening to this podcast and you're not watching movies at Flickr, what the heck?
I know. It's time to get off the couch and do it.
Do you want to just jump in and start with Us?
Yeah, let's talk about Us because, you know, when we did our horror Oscars for, when we did that in early 2018 for everything in 2017, Jordan Peele's first movie, Get Out, was basically at the top of both of our lists, more or less.
Yeah, Carrie and I, we actually like a lot of the same things. I was about to say we have really different tastes, but the truth is we like a lot of the same movies, but we don't always agree what the best movies are, the best performances.
Mm-hmm. I'd say that's fair.
But for Get Out, we're both like, this is the best fucking movie of the year.
It just is. And it's rare that you'll find a director as assured as Peele was in that first movie in particular. And I think part of when a new director comes out with their first film, a debut film, it's hard not to compare what comes next to that first film, especially when that film is so, so good. So I had to take a little bit of my expectations out of it. I think we all suffer from having expectations walking into films. It's hard not to. Sometimes you have to take those expectations away so you can enjoy a film on its own.
Mm-hmm. I guess just a quick statement. There are going to be spoilers for all three of these movies. Hopefully you've seen them, or hopefully the spoilers will not prevent you from watching them if you haven't. How would you describe Us just really loosely?
Us is the story of a family on vacation who are terrorized by seemingly mirror images of themselves in a way and basically have to survive the evening. There's a lot that's not in that description. That is a very, very basic description of what this movie is.
Yeah, but I think that's a great description. I would describe it as like a movie about doppelgangers that they're trying to escape. Just really baseline description.
Yep. And that's what's great about Jordan Peele is in his two films so far is that you can talk about the plot from so many different angles. You can give it a lot of different descriptions.
Yeah. And I have to admit, when I first watched it, I liked it. I was totally into it. But I didn't love it in that immediate, like, kind of, like, hyped up way that I felt about Get Out. But the more I thought about Us, the more incredible I did think it was. And it's definitely going to be one of my favorite movies of 2019.
The difference between Us and Get Out is that Get Out is a very... It exists in and of itself. Everything means something. It's very tight. Everything is very thought out. There's a lot to look at and a lot to consider and a lot to discuss and analyze. But everything exists within the film. I think what's interesting about Us is that there are a lot of different things going on as Us, much more than in Get Out, in my opinion. And so for that reason, I think it takes a lot more thought. And honestly, I need to see it again. You know,
I actually just borrowed it from the library, and I'm about to watch it again.
I think it's actually something we should probably do a follow-up in another episode, kind of our second thoughts on Us. Because while I thought Us is beautifully filmed, I mean, the cinematography is excellent. I thought Lupita Nyong'o is amazing in it. I also thought that there were so many things going on that at times it got a little distracting for me in certain parts of it. But, I mean, yeah. You talk. What are some of your favorite things about Us?
When we saw it, I here are the things I loved. Immediately, I'm like, oh, okay, are there evil doubles? Is there a home invasion? Is there an amusement park with a scary mirror house? There are all of those things. I love all those things. And Lupita Nyong'o gives us not one, but two sensational performances.
Yes. Yes.
So I really loved everything about it. I mean, something that we talked about before we saw the movie, we read that Jordan Peele, to prepare for the role, he'd asked her to watch these like 10 movies.
It's a murderer's row of great horror films that he asked her to watch.
I know.
And stuff that the casual horror fan probably wouldn't watch, or the casual film fan might not have seen.
Well, he's got some things on there like The Sixth Sense, The Shining, but then he's got shit like, oh, he has The Birds on there, but then he had her watch Martyrs.
The casual horror fan and casual film fan most likely has not seen Martyrs.
Yeah, A Tale of Two Sisters, which Carrie and I have talked about before, like some Korean horror in there.
Wonderful film that, again, a lot of people I know, a lot of horror fans that we know have not seen that film. Mm-hmm. So I think his list is pretty excellent.
And Funny Games, which I think is a masterpiece. So I'm just like, damn. And I'm like, Lupita went for it.
She did. She went for the gusto. There's so much to talk about the in Us.
Well, sorry to cut you off.
Mm-hmm. No.
I really felt, you know, when you watch like Get Out, you can see everything that's being presented to you.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel with Us, I did have this inkling when we were watching, like, that maybe some of the deeper meaning wasn't really there, wasn't really earned. But when I looked at it and thought about it, and I'm just going to straight up admit there are things I just didn't think of at all that I thought about later, where I'm just like, I think it was as carefully plotted and put together and as symbolic. It just took a little more digging and thought on the audience's part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not an easily digested film, I think. There's a lot going on with it and a lot you will think about hours, days, even weeks after you watch it. One of the kind of interesting things about it, there's this aspect to the music in it's really interesting. So I got a 5 on it. You know, the classic, you know, 90s hip hop, you know, one hit wonder basically from Loonies is all throughout the movie.
Yeah.
It plays a really pivotal role in the film, this song. And at first I didn't quite understand what it had to do with the movie. It took me doing a little digging, a little writing up to learn about it. And this is one, these are some of the things that I think I love about what Jordan Peele does, because there is such depth to his work. So even this, so I got a 5 on it. The original, a person who claims to be the original writer of that song says that he wrote the hook, and yet somehow he was never credited for that song. And when you think about the film, and when you think about the doppelgangers, or the tethered, as they're called in the film, the tethered are kind of that, they're on that end of society. They're the tethered have never been recognized. The tethered are forced to dwell, you know, away from the rest of humanity. I don't know if that was a happy accident, but I feel like it couldn't have been. I don't feel like there's any way that could be an accident.
Absolutely. I'm sure Jordan Peele considered that.
So that was just one aspect of it I thought was really interesting that didn't hit me during the film. After I did some digging, you know, listening to some interviews, that just kind of really made a lot of sense.
There are so many things, like, when the film opens. Oh, I also want to say, this is a fun film. There are a lot of funny moments, like Tim Heidecker's in it.
Tim Heidecker's a great kind of fall guy for this film. He's a great, yeah, he's great.
I thought Elizabeth Moss was, like, a physical comedian in a way that I wasn't expecting.
Yep.
It was great. So it's really fun, too. It's fun and suspenseful, but it also has, like, all of the symbolism that's, like, right there. So in the beginning, you open and you get to see this, like, Chud VHS case. And it's one of those things where I'm like, is he just showing off that he's also, like, a horror nerd? And I'm like, no, it's actually kind of this movie, because you have these, like, kind of under this underground forgotten experiment group.
Yep. So that's what the Tethered are. So the whole film is, one segment, one part of the film is the Tethered trying to rise up. Mm-hmm. The Tethered trying to take their place in society, if you will. And that's... Exactly, that's Chud, you know, cannibal, subhumanoid, cannibal humanoid underground dwellers.
That's right.
Right. So if you've never seen Chud, well, it's a great 80s film. You should definitely see it. But yeah, that's just one little kind of easy little bit about kind of describing the Tethered.
And Jordan Peele kind of is flexing some horror nerd cred there, because he says his first girlfriend's father directed Chud, so he was like 11 or 12. And that girl's father was Douglas Cheek, director of Chud. So that's there you cool go. As hell.
I mean, I love that. How can you not love that as a horror fan?
I just wanted to read really quickly, like, something that my friend, whose opinions I trust, his name's Rusty, and he did not like Us. He did not like it at all. And he had these criticisms like, its build is horror. It is not horror. Who made these red jumpsuits? The twist was obvious from the start and not because of the commercial.
Well, tell us how you really feel.
So one thing in there that did stand out to me was the who made the red jumpsuits dig, because the jumpsuits and the scissors, I mean, it's so stylish and cool to look at, but I sort of didn't understand that. I was talking about this with my other horror nerd friend, Christy, and she linked me to this thing by April Wolf, who had tweeted that it connects to Norwegian Hulder, like, folklore, where everyone has a double who is uglier and damaged and trying to replace you. So to prevent that, you're supposed to hang steel shears over your children's bed. And I'm like, damn, Jordan Peele dug deep. He was looking into all sorts of shit.
Absolutely.
And then I, like, Googled, like, Jordan Peele scissors us, and I guess he was using the scissors as a symbol, and his quote is, "There's a duality to scissors, a whole made up of two parts, but also they lie in this territory between the mundane and the absolutely terrifying." So I do feel like all the thought and all these complexities and little things to dig into in the movie and sit with you.
And I love that quote. So again, and something as mundane as a pair of scissors, but yet used in the wrong way, are absolutely an instrument of death.
It's scary. It's great.
Mm-hmm. The surface easy explanation is this film is about... It's about people feeling invisible in the world, unable to move from where they are, stuck in their place, stuck in their station. And yet at the same time, you have all these media channels telling you that the world's not like that, that everyone's together, the Hands Across America, whereas...
Yeah, exactly. Hands Across America.
The Hands Across America thing. And I think what they're saying is that's what our culture is trying to tell you is what's happening. But what's actually happening is that there's this deep division that is... expressed by having people living above and below ground.
Yeah, the Hands Across America thing was interesting because I was watching it that whole time, and it's not until they're like actually, I mean, they show it at the beginning, but it's not really till the end where I'm like, just like, oh yeah, this is like a gesture referencing something else in time.
Well, yeah, it's about sort of the ridiculousness of trying to promote something like that when you have people suffering in the ways they've suffered for decades and for hundreds of years, and yet you get these cheery messages that just seem, I'm sure, false to a lot of people.
Oh, 100%. I just can't get over Lupita Nyong'o in these two roles. Like, she got so weird with it. I read that she patterned her double voice, her tethered voice, after, like, JFK Jr.'s voice strain issues, and I'm like, that is cuckoo. That is so out there and
that's
awesome.
Commitment right there.
Yeah, I just love that. I think that role could have been less weird and more palatable, and she just wanted to go all the way with it.
I love it. And I think in that, when you have an opportunity like that in a movie with, you know, with this great director, this great script, you just go for it. You get weird with it. Mm-hmm. And see what happens. And I'm sure Peele would have told her if he didn't like it. What I imagine has happened is she came in with something and he said, there it is. Go with that. I can't imagine there was much discussion on that.
I also really loved the creepy kids. Because, I mean, creepy kids in horror movies, those are just two things that go together. But there sure. These creepy kids were amazing.
They were great. I mean, you know, you go back to the creepy kids of old, you know, some of the original great creepy kids in Village of the Damned, and then you fast forward to Bloody Birthday with the killer kids in the early 80s. And yeah, this has some great killer kids scene, absolutely.
But I thought, I didn't write down the children's actors' names, but whoever played, like, the daughter who's, like, a runner, there was something about her smile that is one of the most unnerving images in the movie. Mm. The tethered version of her.
Yes.
And just seeing her run and smiling, I'm just like, damn, this girl is great.
Yeah, I mean, the performances across the board were fun, scary, just really entertaining. I mean, I think Peele just brings out greatness in the actors, and that's due to the fact that he's writing the scripts. You know, these are his visions almost wholly. Mm-hmm. Like a Tarantino, I think that Peele knows exactly what he wants. He communicates that, and everything just kind of flows from that.
I want to say the last scene I loved, or maybe just the setting, is that Santa Cruz Amusement Park, just that entire opening sequence. I thought that was so perfect. I was already in it. Like, when she's going through these dark mirrors by herself, I'm just like, oh, hell no.
I really thought the first scene was great. I almost wanted more of that. There were parts of the film where I wanted a little more of that. That was one of my only knocks against it, is that it kind of lounged for a while. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I was comparing it to his first film, Get Out, when there is no escape in Get Out. Mm-hmm. There's no break from the tension. And in Us, there are long kind of breaks that things sort of just sort of chill for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, but that's also good in a way, too, because when things start to really happen, when the tethered start actually appearing, the film does jump, kind of go from park into fifth gear. So,
did you feel there was a villain in this movie?
Well, at first, you think the tethered are the villain.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, they're the ones slicing people up with scissors. They're
slicing people up.
Kicking people.
Yeah.
Motorboat murdering them.
I think Heidegger and Moss are meant to be villains because they're the establishment, you know. They're the well-to-do white couple that are just kind of bored with their money. And yeah, they just kind of do what they want.
They are obnoxious caricatures. And they're twin daughters. Wow.
And they're supposed to be. Great. I love the Shining reference of the twin daughters. So yeah, I mean, they're supposed to be. That's kind of what he's showing. There's a scene where they're at the beach, and Heidegger's promising that he'll let him go out on his boat because he's got the nice boat, you know. And the actor playing Lupita Nyong'o's husband, you know, he's got the starter boat.
I know. I mean, let's be real. That man was still able to buy a boat.
True. Yeah, he's not the worst place in the world.
So, yeah, for me, like, the commentary on, like, America and capitalism, like, it did work, and I thought it was meaningful and, like, well done. But, yeah, it was hard for me to kind of figure out any sort of villainy in the movie. And I guess I did see the twist coming a little before it was revealed, and I'm usually not good at catching that.
I didn't think I was necessarily surprised by anything in this film, whereas I was in Get Out. I really wasn't. However, I still thought the ride was really interesting. And also, Winston Duke is the guy who plays Lupita Nyong'o's husband, and he's great.
Ah, I can't believe we haven't talked more about Winston Duke. He's so awesome.
He's so funny. He and Tim Heidecker really provide the comic relief for the film.
He's playing it a little more straight than...
A little more, but in the scenes where he's supposed... There's some scenes where he's supposed to be really scared, and he's just kind of doing his thing. He's not all that scared. And it's an interesting... Those are some interesting scenes because... He just has an interesting character. Nothing seems to get to him because when everyone else is screaming and freaked out, he's just kind of he's kind of like, okay, we're gonna do this. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting to me too. He was great in Black Panther also.
For sure, yeah, Black Panther couple.
Yes, yes.
All right, are we ready to? Did you have any other Us comments?
No, I think in the end, I think Us is a really good film. It is more of a suspense than a true horror film, but that's okay because so is Get Out. And so were some other films. And it still has a lot of horror elements. I mean, that's the great thing about these movies is they're not just defined by one genre. You know, there's suspense and mystery and
thriller. I mean, the three movies we're talking about, I think there were a couple parts in Us that actually scared me as opposed to the other two movies.
Ah, okay. Okay. But yeah, I think, so overall, it's a good film. I think it's a very good film. I would have liked a little bit more kind of ramped up in the horror aspect of it for me, which sounds funny because I know there's a big extended sequence of that, but I still think it's very good.
I think it's great. I think it's completely amazing. 5 out of 5 stars
for me. I will give it... Okay, we're doing stars this time. All right, new rating system. I would give it probably... I would say 3.5 to 4 for me, which is still
three
really...
3.5, Carrie? What the fuck?
That's still really good. I would say to 4. I would say right in between 3.5 to 4.
Okay.
So yeah, I thought it was very good.
Do we want to talk about Midsommar?
I think we should talk about Midsommar, yes.
So Midsommar is about a group of Americans who are going over with their Swedish friend to witness like a Swedish Midsommar celebration. And two of the group are a couple who are clearly very unhappy together. And yes, when they get to this place called Harga, which I looked up, it is a real place in Sweden, though as far as I can tell, this quasi-cult does not exist.
We're taking a group there next week if anyone wants to go. It should be a lot of fun.
But yeah, I loved Midsommar so much that I watched it 2 times in theaters.
I will be seeing it again. I will most definitely be seeing it again. I think it's almost 2.5, it's over 2.5 hours.
It's long as hell, and I do not like long movies, but I loved it.
It's great. It's not what I thought it would be, and also what I thought it would be all at the same time.
Oh, jeez. I think I'm going to get tongue-tied because I don't know quite what to say. I guess I will be a little personal and say that I'm going through, like, a breakup for the past few months. Mm-hmm. So I went in expecting to be extremely depressed. I knew this was about, like, a couple that really shouldn't be together. So I went in thinking, I'm just going to go in and feel terrible. But I came out feeling as light and happy as a summery Swedish day.
Well, the movie is about catharsis. It's about shedding off what's holding you back.
It absolutely is. You could argue that this is a slasher movie that ends with the girlfriend getting rid of her boyfriend, shoving him in a bear suit and burning him alive to be sacrificed. And to me, the catharsis is she finds herself with a family who will literally make her feel held and help her grieve.
It's also really interesting. Maybe I might get some pushback on this, but I think this is interesting. The reaction that I've seen from men and women to the ending of this film is somewhat different. It's really interesting. I think from a lot of my female friends who saw it, they were like, yeah, get him, you know, at the end of the movie. And a lot of the dudes were like, it's interesting. Okay. I liked it. But I mean, I think we've all been in a relationship where figuratively, maybe we've thought about that when someone did us wrong, you know, getting back at them, or just if things didn't work out, it's that idea of revenge of some sort, or, you know,
it's like this movie is highlighting how uncomfortably mismatched this couple is and how they shouldn't be together. And they both have problems for different reasons. Like, neither of them are perfect. But I guess I sympathize more, as I think you're supposed to, with the lead woman than the boyfriend. To me, the more I thought about it, the more upset I started to feel about him. Because he's kind of gaslighting her from the beginning, where he's just like, you know, it's just your sister overreacting. Like, kind of thinking she should calm down. And he's just sad he's not with a girlfriend who wants to have sex with him. And then he's such a coward. Like, he's such a coward. He can't tell his friends really what's up. He can't tell his girlfriend what's up. And when they get over there and she's just like, hey, something weird's going on. Why was that inseparable super in love couple? Like, why would they leave separately? And he's just like, oh, I'm sure it's nothing. Like, he's constantly writing her off. And then by the point that, like, academic greed shows up in him, you're like, oh, this guy's 100% like a ding dong.
No, he is. He's a very, very unlikable character, but he hides it well enough that you at certain points of the film forget how much he's trying to gaslight everyone around him.
I
not just her.
Argued about him with Jason, though. Not everyone sees him as a bad guy, because Jason's like, I can sympathize because there's a part of you when you're in a bad relationship where you tell yourself you're doing the right thing. There's no good point to leave this person. And I'm like, fuck this guy. He wasn't helping her by staying together.
I know a number of guys that probably could identify with certain aspects of that, of being staying in a relationship and being unhappy with it, but not knowing how to leave it. Mm-hmm. However, the way he treats her and the in their conversations is it's cringeworthy. Mm-hmm. Because he really does, he's never honest with her in any way.
Yeah.
He neither of them really can be honest with each other. She continued, in fact, the first, you know, 15, 20 minutes of this film, I think, are really interesting in the conversations they're having as they prepare for this trip, because there are moments where I think she wants to express herself, where she wants to push back at something he said, but she keeps, she always stops herself and pulls herself back in as if she's supposed to just be the cute, silent girlfriend who's going to be for her man, you know?
She feels guilty that she's put him through so much emotional support.
She
does.
She has a sister who has a lot of serious trauma, just mental trauma that she's dealing with. And it's, I think it's caused her to feel very insecure, and she's, again, always kind of having to help out with her family, so she feels like she's not a good girlfriend and all these things. And and he takes advantage of that.
He totally does. Like, opening line before you even meet this character, and you just hear him on the phone, she's like, hey, what's up? And he's like, just did some resin with my bros, and now we're eating pizza. And then when he comes over, and she's just discovered that he's booked tickets to go to Sweden in a couple weeks, but he hadn't told her. And somehow she ends up apologizing for, like, wanting to talk about that. And I'm just like, well, that's not healthy.
No. You get the sense that if she walked out of his life that day, he wouldn't even care.
Yeah.
That he would just... He wouldn't even notice.
The other criticism I've heard about the ending, like, to me, I thought it was, like, hilarious and awesome. But a lot of people are like, well, did he deserve to be shoved in a bear and burned alive? And I'm like, well, it's a slasher movie. Did anyone else deserve to be killed in those horrible ways they were throughout this movie? It's not really about that.
And I didn't find any joy in the end whatsoever. There's none for me whatsoever. I thought it was a horrific ending. And I got the sense that I didn't even know if she was happy at the ending. Yes, there was a catharsis of him being gone, but she goes through a lot of emotions. I don't think she was, at the end of the film, she was like, hey, this is going to be great. I love it. I think that she would, I think everyone in the film is in sort of this malaise.
They're literally in a drug haze.
They're in a drug haze the entire film. So I don't think she was capable of being happy, truly happy, or truly sad, or having any truly honest emotion at that time. So that's what I think is kind of interesting about it too. Oh. But we all had our own. But I know when I walked out of that movie and talked to y'all, people were like, "Yeah, fuck that guy." sorry for parental advisory warning there. But it is really interesting, and I think the fact that we're talking about still months after we've seen it, or month after we've seen it almost now, shows that there's again, this is a movie with the depth of a film like Us,
mm-hmm.
where there's a lot to read into it. It seems deceivingly simple at times, because the basic story is it's the story has been done before. In fact, The Wicker Man is a really close cousin to this film.
Oh yeah, you can't look at this movie without thinking about The Wicker Man.
You got to, Ari Aster, the director, admits it's an influence. How could it not be? So you know, you take dumb Americans, you throw them into a situation, a foreign country that you don't understand, and watch them one by one get picked off. But this film is so much more than that, and it has so much more depth, and it's absolutely... Okay, we talked about Us as cinematography. This film is just beautiful to look at.
It's so beautiful.
It's so beautiful. There's not a scene at night aside from the beginning of the film. The rest of the entire film is bathed.
There's one film
at excuse
night.
Excuse me. There is one... Pardon me. There are a couple scenes at night, but I feel like I don't even remember those scenes. All I remember is this bright, almost too bright, ominously bright.
It's drenched
daytime.
In sunlight and acid flowers. So.
It is. It's and there's so many. You know, this is a film I think that will warrant multiple viewings for everyone who sees it and enjoys it, because every scene has so much going on in it. There's things to look at. Your eyes can't possibly get everything on one viewing.
Agree. Well, to me, a movie like Us is a more important and meaningful movie, but personally, Midsommar is just a movie that, like, hits you in the gut and feels great. So I love them the same in different ways. Like I said, I really came out feeling awesome about it. And this is also a movie, I think I saw Andrew Shearer post about this, where he was saying, like, Ari Aster's, like, actually a really funny director. And I couldn't agree with that observation more. When I was watching Hereditary, there were a handful of parts that I really, like, belly laughed at. And I didn't know if it was because I'm just a weirdo who laughs at messed up things, which is sometimes true. I'm also a nervous laugher. But
you're then, totally a nervous laugher.
Yeah. But then I got to Midsommar and I'm just like, oh, pubic hair pie. I'm pretty sure he's fucking with us and it's totally cool to laugh at a bunch of these things.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah, there's so many scenes in Midsommar.
That you random get reference to Austin Powers?
Yes. You get into this about an hour and a half of this film. Here's what happened. I was going to go see it with Steph and a lot of friends of ours. And I did not get the Facebook message text that said that the movie was changed. The time was changing. It's on me. I should have, I guess I have my notifications off. Either way, I get to the film. I'm in the theater. I'm like, I don't see anybody. Haven't heard from anybody. Did I get this wrong? I look at my text. No text from Steph that says it's different. I was like, okay, everything's good. I get in the movie. I'm like, wait, I didn't check Messenger. And so then I look at my Messenger and I realize
we had the thread on Messenger.
I know, but I was thinking text. Anyway, so I had the choice. I'm sitting in the theater. The film's about to start. I'm like, I can walk out right now and go back later and watch it with a group. And I was like, I must watch this film now. I'm here. I've got to watch it. So I'm by myself. I didn't know what to think. About an hour and a half in this film, I felt like I was tripping on LSD or something like that. I almost felt like I felt like I didn't know what was happening. I didn't know what the characters were doing. I didn't know where their story arcs were at. And I realized Ari Aster's got me. I'm in. Yeah. I'm in the spider web of this film because he does a fantastic job of making you feel exactly like the characters are on screen. Because there are points where you're like, I don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. None of the characters do either. No one has any idea what's happening anytime in this movie. They're following these made up scenarios and sometimes in their head that they have no idea what's going on. And I think it's because, like you said, they're constantly being dosed. So
yeah.
It's sort of this one bizarre sort of scene sort of just gliding into the next.
It was kind of nuts to me that everyone was so into like tripping all the time too, because I mean when you first get there, they've been on this long ass flight to get to Sweden, and Danny, the main character, she's like, I'm just gonna get my footing first, and then everyone kind of gives her this look, and the boyfriend tries to be nice or whatever, I'm using air quotes, and he's just like, well, I'll wait with you, and everyone can wait with us if they want. And it's just like, no, you put her in another uncomfortable situation.
Oh, keeps doing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, they're all like, yeah, from pretty much the minute they get there until the end, like this boyfriend is watching his girlfriend who he can't communicate with in this May Queen dance, and he's offered a drink. He looks hesitant and he's like, what is this? And she tells him pretty much, she's like, it'll lower your inhibitions and give you strength. Like, what do you think's in there? And then he drinks it anyway, even though he looks hesitant. So no one's really...
And his drink has a different tint than any of the other drinks at that table. Yeah. It's a slightly redder tint. And well, you just think to yourself, I don't know if I'll drink that.
He's met up with an elder woman from the village who, like, basically tells him, like, this woman's into you. You ate her pubic hair. She, like, wants to breed with you. What do you think? Oh, my God, Carrie. Talk about the part that made me laugh the hardest. This, like,
when they go into the
ritualized mating scene.
Oh my God.
It killed me. When that woman started pushing on his butt, I like lost it. I'm just not mature enough to like watch that and not laugh.
It is. Okay, yeah. So basically he goes in for this mate to this setup in this one of the houses where the mating will begin. And he walks in and there is this semicircle of women, all completely naked. And then the woman who he is supposed to copulate with laying down on the floor, looking a little bit concerned, looking a little bit kind of freaked out slightly about what's going on. And it just gets weirder from there. It's one of the strangest scenes I've seen on film in a long time.
Oh my God. One of my favorite awkward moments in that scene is she reaches up her hand and he thinks, oh, I'm going to reach up and hold her hand. But she's reaching up her hand to be comforted by one of the other women there. Who starts singing. Oh, and the singing.
The singing.
And like the singing wailing that they do with Danny when she's crying. I'm just like, man, this rules. I disagree with you in that. I do think Danny was experiencing true emotions. And I think it was helpful for her to be surrounded by these nutty women who were helping her cry it out. And were like, because they were recognizing her pain in a way that her boyfriend didn't.
I'll clarify. I'm not saying that she wasn't feeling true emotions, but I think of what I disagree with is the idea that she was happy at the end of it.
She's smiling.
I don't think she's smiling necessarily because she's happy. I think she's in a drug fueled malaise and her mind is gone. But I do agree and agree with even when I saw the film that I do think she does. Before that, she probably works through some of those things. I'm with you there. But I don't believe at the end that she was anything other than just like out of her freaking mind. But regardless, there's a lot you can read into that. You could totally read into that she was happy. I get that.
I read into it. She's happy. This is her new family. Although to comment on that, I do still think this cult is villainous. Like, I mean, the boyfriend's
they're awful.
Villain, but they're murders. And I mean, and when you
they
think...
kill all sorts of people. They kill their own people. They kill foreigners. They don't care who they kill. They'll kill anybody. If they don't like you, they will find a way to kill you.
It brings back that scene with the Swedish friend where he's talking to Danny where he's like, I lost both of my parents in a fire and I was orphaned, but I had this family. And I'm like, oh shit, well I bet I know how your folks died in a fire.
Yeah, they kill everybody's parents. This cult is not okay. There's nothing about that's okay. They killed Danny's parents. They killed they killed his parents.
Do you think they killed Danny's parents?
I absolutely 100% do.
I was talking about this with the friends I watched this with. I do not think so. I think that the circumstances lined up because she gets to the apartment where the Americans and the Swedish friend are talking about this trip. And the Swedish guy is like, I wish I could remember his name. Sorry. And he's just like, I'm really glad you're coming. And you're like, oh, shit. And you get over there and you're like, okay, this terrible boyfriend's going to get to have sex with a hot Swedish lady and Danny's going to be like mincemeat sacrificed. But it was something different. So I was pleased with that. But I don't think they murdered her family. I really don't think that was a planned thing.
Here's why I thought. Because later on he says that my parents were murdered. Or my parents died in the fire, what have you. I think that was directly connected to the cult.
Right.
He would have had something to do with the death of her parents because at that point, it's somewhat normalized. You know, it would be normalized to him to potentially kill parents if that's what they needed to do. Mm. Because killing the parents brings you into the cult. It cuts off. It's what cults do. They take you away from their family. You cut off after a while. Like when you go into a cult, you cut off all connections to the outside world. So this cult is not very subtle. Like when they're going to do things, no, they're going to go. They're like going all the way. And so I think they absolutely did because I think they wanted Danny for a while. I think he wanted Danny. I think he's also in love with Danny. But I think that was the only way that they could get her there and keep her there without her wanting to be back because of the trauma with her sister. I absolutely think the cult killed her family. Because that cut off anything that she would have needed to go back for because she was there with her boyfriend and her family was dead. There was nothing to distract her.
I bought into the mental illness of her sister in doing that just because I've witnessed other severely bipolar and suicidal people.
No, I
and
think she
I
could have been. I think she was.
Also bipolar because they make a point of showing off her prescription to Ativan.
Mm-hmm. No, I think both of those things, in my opinion, coexisted. I think that she was severely mentally ill. You know, maybe that was in her plan. And maybe she did kill herself. I just feel like because there was that flower by the bed, there's a little symbol of what comes later by the bed. And I saw that same little flower later on in the film. I absolutely, I feel pretty strongly about that. But y'all can weigh in on that too if you have some opinions. If anyone's out there listening and wants to talk about it, you can either Facebook us or you can email us, mybloodyhorrorcast@gmail.com if you ever have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. Did you have any thoughts on...
Instagram us. Actually, find us on Instagram and comment there too.
That'd be great too. Yeah. It's also My Bloody Horrorcast.
Yep. You got it.
Did you have any thoughts on the character of Josh? He's kind of the character out of the group when you go over and you're like, well, you seem the least douchey and like you're generally, genuinely interested in these cultures, these rituals. But at the same time, he exhibits that he is looking at this more as an academic project than, like, respecting what they're saying to him.
I think that's part of it, too. No, he seems to be the most together of any of the characters. You know, Will Poulter is, he's just there because he's hoping to get laid. Will's like the classic American guy.
I was psyched to see this dude. I'd only seen him in one other thing, which is Black Mirror's Bandersnatch episode. Yep. And when I saw him here, I'm like, well, he's up to no good.
And he does a great American accent.
Yeah.
But yeah, you kind of had a little bit of everything. You have the asshole boyfriend. You have the, you know, the horny friend who that's all he can think about. And then you have...
Skin the fool.
Skin the fool. Yep. Mm-hmm. He was the fool. He was always the fool. And then you have William Jackson Harper who, he seems to be the most reasonable one of the group. He seems to be the one in the best headspace for sure. Mm-hmm. Everyone else has got, you know... The couple, they hate where they're at. Will Poulter hates where he's at. William Jackson Harper actually seems to be happy with where he's at at the moment.
Yeah, he's a pure academic.
Mm-hmm. But I think that... Here's the other thing I think about this cult. I don't think the cult cares who you are. I don't think they care what you do. I think that if you come there and you are intended that you're going to go, that you're a sacrifice, you're just getting sacrificed. I don't think anything else matters to them at all.
They could have gone either way on Danny. I don't know. But the thing that's cool,
but they wanted Danny.
Well, that's
I think the whole time they wanted Danny. I don't think they want... I think they brought her there and brought the rest of the group along so that there's really nothing else, you know. Maybe the whole group disappears and nothing and none of them are ever seen again, so there's no loose ends mm-hmm. for this group. Her parents are dead. You know, I'm not sure what's going on with the rest of the characters' parents. So I think this was all a grand plan well before they get there.
I guess I think it was less planned out.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's fine.
But you never know. That's, again, the great thing about a movie like this is there's so many ways to go with it. So Midsommar gets, for me, at least a 4 out of 5, I would say.
Yeah, I'm so easy. I'm a 5 out of 5 stars again. I just loved it. Oh, I wanted to talk about a couple more things.
Oh, yes.
I also laughed at the... Well, okay, some things that I don't love about Midsommar. I didn't really love that they had this inbred, disabled person that was clearly not treated as a person by the rest of the cult. When I was thinking about issues I had with the cult, because when I first came out of there, I'm like, hell yeah, this Swedish cult, giving Danny the support she needs. But then I'm just like, also mass murderers, also a suicide cult, like a death cult. And then I started thinking about other things. How they're purposely creating disabled people and putting them in a life that is clearly below the quality of the other people there, and how they're probably a racist cult because they're bringing in outsiders to breed. They, like, explain that. But, I mean, they're clearly not breeding with people of other races. This is not a cult that's into miscegenation. If you're a person of color and you find yourself in Harga for a ceremony, know that you're going to be sacrificed.
I didn't think about that coming from that angle at all, but that could be. I definitely think that they're representing fascism for sure. I've no doubt about that, and I don't know about their, you know, anything beyond that. But usually, misogyny, sexism, racism tends to come with that when you have a strong fascist group where you fall into the group think of that cult. I absolutely think that represents, or he's trying to represent some contemporary countries.
I still don't have a completely negative view of the cult, though. Is that nuts?
Hey, I don't know. I hear they have some openings. So.
I wouldn't be welcome there.
That upsets me, Steph, because I think you'd do a great job there. Or you really would.
Oh, sorry. This is my very last note. I love the folk art so much when it opens with that beautiful illustration. And I had to look up the artist, or I think my friend Robert linked me. It's Ragnar Pearson, P-E-R-S-S-O-N. Mm-hmm. And just this beautiful folk art. It looks like legit folk art, but dark and twisted.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
All the art, the art direction of the film, the sets, everything visual that you see in the film is just so well done. Mm-hmm. So creative and, yeah, it's really great. Now, so I still loved Hereditary. I still liked Hereditary more as a film. I just think it's a fantastic film. I know we disagree on that. Mm-hmm. But I think Midsommar is a fantastic follow-up. So here we have, you know, our second movie tonight, same situation, two directors, sophomore films.
Ooh, good point, good point.
And I think that Midsommar is almost just as good in a way as Hereditary. It's just a drastically different film.
I feel like they're companion piece movies, but yeah, like you said, totally opposite, because one is so dark. Like, there are parts of Hereditary where I'm, turn a light on in this house! But in Hereditary, it's just so bright.
You almost yearn for it to be dark in parts of Midsommar, which I think is absolutely the point.
Well, anyway, I'm ready for Ari Aster's next movie. If, like, heads get smashed and crowns are put on people and there's a person who looks a little unusual that's being used as a vessel, we'll know that he's got these things going on.
Right. A little throwback to Leatherface in there, too. I won't go too much into that, but there's a little Leatherface moment for sure.
I will go into it. Mark Suit, that part was insane.
That, and what's so great about that scene is it's there and it's gone. You don't even have a chance to really get into it because you see these horrifying images and then boom, you're in the next scene. He does not dwell on them at all, which makes you kind of want to go back and see it again to think to yourself, like, am I really seeing this?
All right. Are we ready to move on to climax?
Final film of the night that we're going to discuss is Gaspar Noé's newest film, Climax.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his best received film.
It is. The reviews overall are really strong, and I think most of the reviewers and people I've just heard in general talking about say that it's one of his most focused films.
I heard someone say it was his most accessible film, and I'm like, and that's saying a lot, because there is still incest, there are still pregnant women being brutally beaten.
There's self-mutilation, there's forced abortion, there's rampant misogyny. I mean, it's, and yes, it is his most accessible film from what I've heard. Now, this is my first Gaspar Noé film. Steph's seen them all. This is my first one. And knowing the plot structures, and Steph, you filled me in on some of the other films, kind of what makes him tick. I get that this is his most accessible. And I thought that this film was really, really interesting. I really loved, here's what's strange for me, it's about a dance troupe. I know nothing about dance. You know, so you think you can dance? No. Me? My answer is no. But
same.
I thought that the first 45 minutes, I was completely and utterly entranced by the dance scenes. I thought they were gorgeous and beautiful, and the dancing represented all these emotions. All the emotions of each character were perfectly represented in their movements. And so I was really impressed by that early part of the film, especially.
Yeah, and Carrie and I were talking. Didn't we decide we're pretty sure that they're done in, like, these incredible one takes?
And I haven't done enough research, so if anyone has some insight on this, I think that there's a cut between the first and second acts, mm-hmm. and then I don't know if there's a cut in the entire second act, because it's almost like there's two acts. Like, you could. Mm-hmm. Most
you
movies
feel
have a
like
third
a,
act, but
you feel like you're present at this, like, totally gone wrong after
the camera,
party.
Right, because the camera keeps turning. So the basic premise of this film is you've got this group of dancers that are going on their first American tour. A lot of them haven't been to America, and they're going on this tour. And it's a group, a really disparate group of incredibly talented dancers representing all, you know, races and all these cultures, and it's really interesting. So it starts out, you have all these people, they're excited, they're ready to go. This is their opportunity to work with this wonderful choreographer that they all respect. And then the movie goes from sort of this elation, which you could almost call heaven,
yeah.
you know? And then it descends into the bowels of hell.
It does. It's set in the 90s, and it's just this dance troupe throwing an after party, but it really does turn into this, like, its own horror film, because someone has laced their sangria with LSD. We're watching it with a group, which I would highly recommend watching with other people. I think I would have not enjoyed it as much watching alone. And I loved this movie. But yeah, my friend Chris, like, totally called out. He's just like, I think it's that girl in the beginning who's talking about her roommate putting acid in his eyes. And she's just like, it was a weird thing to mention and then have a film with acid.
Yeah, it's... this film, So it's my first introduction to Gaspar Noé. I really am glad I saw this one because I wasn't disappointed as far as the debauchery that ensued throughout this movie. Sofia Boutella is the lead. She was great.
Oh,
she was so good in it.
Selva.
What's that?
The only character whose name I remember.
The only character whose name I remember. She's in excruciating pain through most of this film and just kind of out of her mind, but she does provide the emotional core for what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And she seems to be the only one who has some semblance of her mind left, or some semblance of how to try to get away, or even, you know, any kind of empathy.
Mm-hmm. Agree. And I mean, there is an argument. Is this just a PSA, like, don't do drugs? I don't think it is. I think it really is like just a crazy story.
It feels like it is in some ways. I'm not convinced that's the deal. He does have, from what I've heard also, there are a number of films where he shows drugs and their horrific, awful effects. So you get the sense that either he loves psychedelics and harder drugs, or he is, or he's, you know, preaching the Sermon on the Mountaintop against him. I don't know.
I don't think so. I really don't. Well, some parts that I, like, laughed at in this, as soon as the brother-sister duo were shown, I'm like, oh, God, I hope there's not incest. There's been incest in other Gaspar Noé movies, at least one. So I was just like, damn. But when it happened, and then the next day, everyone's, like, kind of out of it, or they're back in, I should say, as themselves, and the brother's just like, don't tell Dad, nothing happened. And I thought that was really funny.
That scene was hilarious and just horrifying at the same time, just because you're reminded of what actually happened between the two of them. Yeah, there was one reviewer who said that so Benoit Deby is the cinematographer, and he was the cinematographer
killer.
For Love and Enter the Void and Irreversible.
Enter the Void is my favorite Gaspar Noé movie.
So he's filmed Gaspar Noé's four most well-known films. And they said that basically this movie is filmed, but it's as if the movie was filmed by the Marquis de Sade with a Steadicam. And that's kind of, that's fair. I think that's fair.
You know, going back to it though, I really did feel like we were put in this like 90s French dance troupe party, because that is a world, like Carrie, completely not relatable to me. But like, mm-mm. All of those reds and like the throbbing techno, like none
yes.
of that is my scene. And I'm like, this is amazing.
Well, then at one point they're just like, we'll show you it's hell. We're not going to just imply that it's hell. The camera turns completely upside down and you have people in it. And that
yeah.
angle is, but it's a really, there's some really creative camera work. I mean, this guy can't stand still ever. But his camera work is so fluid also. He's always kind of weaving between these characters, especially in the early parts of the film and later. Weaving between these various conversations and between these characters and weaving in and out of different emotions. And it's really, you're always on edge because the camera's always moving and that's the thing that's great. The thing keeps the movie moving where it could get stale. It's kind of funny. I think that movie could have gotten stale even with all the craziness if that camera work hadn't been so dynamic.
Mm-hmm. It's also like a pretty short movie considering the other two are a little lengthier.
Mm-hmm.
I did save this Gaspar Noé quote. I still haven't read any reviews. I keep meaning to. I just kind of ran out of time before our podcast recording. But it was Gaspar Noé talking about how like this film got a lot of critical acclaim, and he said, I must be doing something wrong. I have to take a long holiday and rethink my career. And I'm just like, I love you so much.
I think he just likes to go against the grain whatever way he can. I think he's there to shock. I don't think he cares how he does it. I think he wants to do it in a beautiful way. I am going to have to go see some of his other films. I don't know if I'll like them or not. I did like Climax. I don't think I liked it as much as you.
I think he's a true auteur.
But I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting. And if you haven't seen a Gaspar Noé film, like myself, this is probably a good start. I've read up a lot about his other films, and whereas I think there's only one that I don't want to see, I think I could stomach all of them. There's just one I just really don't want to see.
Is it Irreversible?
It's Irreversible. I'm just not
going to
see it.
You know what? I was thinking, like, I've seen it one time, and when I saw it, I watched it with my amazing Fantagraphics boss, who's no longer with us, Kim Thompson. Mm. He showed it at his house. He showed that in Antichrist back to back.
Oh, my God.
I'd never seen a Gaspar Noé movie before, and I watched Irreversible, and the scene that upsets everybody who watches it. It's this, I want to say it's a 7 to 9 minute rape scene. And this camera just doesn't move. And the actor they have as the attacker in this and the rapist, he's a professionally trained martial artist. So his fists are coming within millimeters of Monica Bellucci's body, but it looks so real and it's so traumatizing. Like, all the trigger warnings for any woman who's been in a horrible situation or had something terrible happen. Like, Irreversible is one of the most difficult movies to watch, but I will say, I still think it's worth watching if you're like a film weirdo and nerd, as I know Carrie is, like myself. Oh, yeah. And because it's the first time I'd seen something that had been shot backwards.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of became a trend. I started seeing it in a couple music videos and stuff. But
Memento,
I'm just like,
and all that.
And Memento, movies like that. But Irreversible was the first one. I'm pretty sure it's the first time I saw that happen. And I'm like, this rules. Like, this is so crazy. But it did kind of... I did think of that when we were watching Climax, because it also starts you at the very end with one of the dance troops struggling and dying in the snow.
Yes. That's the one that tried to get out.
They kicked him out. Yeah. They just, everyone got this mob mentality and decided that this guy had drugged them all. And they throw him out in the snow to die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, my last quote about Irreversible is, I cannot watch Monica Bellucci be defiled like that. I just refuse. I think she's one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen in my life.
True.
I just can't do it.
She totally is.
But I do want to see Enter the Void. So I think that's...
I was going to say, I think his hardest movie is I Stand Alone. I hope I'm not screwing up that title. But it's basically about this criminal butcher. And that is a movie with incest. And
I've heard it's pretty
violence,
grim.
And it's just so unrelentingly grim. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That I would say... that might be the one movie of Gaspar Noé's I really never want to watch again. I don't plan to watch Irreversible again, but I think I saw more that I could recommend to someone in that than I Stand Alone. And then I think Enter the Void a lot of people could take. And Love, here's the thing about Love. I'm still waiting to rewatch that movie in 3D as God intended, because there is a scene in that movie. It's actual like live sex in the movie, or the sex acts are being performed, like they're not simulated. And there's a scene that is a money shot, and that should have been coming right at us in the audience. And when you're watching in regular D, it's just not the way it's supposed to be.
It seems to me that's the only reason to see that film is that end scene. It also seems to me, I haven't even watched this movie,
good.
But it seems to me it's Gaspar Noé saying, hey, you stayed to the end of this movie, here's what you get.
No, it's not even that. Like, I want to say it might be in the middle. I've got to rewatch it.
Okay.
Those are our thoughts on Climax. Climax, I might not give 5 out of 5. I might give 4 out of 5 stars, too.
Okay. Yeah, Climax probably is, for me, about a 3. It's better than above average. But I wouldn't say... It's definitely not as good as Midsommar or Us. It's not going to be on my top of the end of the year, whereas I think Midsommar and Us will probably be in my top horror films of 2019.
Climax will absolutely be in my top horror films of the year.
But then again, it remains to be seen what comes out the rest of this year. I liked Climax. I think it's a good film. If it might be up there, who knows?
We should have a catch-up episode, because I have seen other horror movies this
we watched
year
Perfection.
That I really enjoyed. Yeah, Carrie and I watched The Perfection.
We both watched Pet Sematary.
We watched the new Pet Sematary. Both had things that we enjoyed. We were entertained by both, but we can talk about those later. I watched Ma, which I want to talk about with everybody all the time.
I know. I think that's probably a good one to talk about. I still have not seen that one. And there's a number of others we still haven't seen yet. I think we've at least got some of the big ones out of the way.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more to come. We have a big fall as far as horror movies coming up.
Is there like one movie coming up off the top of your head you're really excited to see?
I mean, The Lighthouse.
Same. I mean, can't wait.
I mean, you know, for those of you who enjoyed The Witch, it's the follow-up. And yeah, I'm very, very excited
about
that one.
We're ready for everybody's sophomore efforts in horror.
It's a big year for sophomore horror makers or sophomore horror. You know, it's great. Let's see here. Yeah, Lighthouse is most definitely a big one. And then there's a few that we've missed. You know, I know one that you got to see, High Life.
I will totally talk about High Life with everyone, aka Jizzbox in Space. I also hope everyone gets to see that. Well, one movie that I thought was opening this week, also something that got on my radar because of Andrew Scheer, is Them That Follow. Do I have that title right?
Where it's yes,
like
you do.
Kind of those like church
snake talkers, people. Snake handlers, living up in the wilds of Appalachia.
And there are a bunch of things that I like about it. One, the cast, because it's Olivia Colman, who I adore, and Walton Goggins, who I love. And I think, like, one of the young actresses who is in, like, Justified also, and Booksmart. I don't know. It's weird. Like, it doesn't fit me at all, but I, like, loved the show Justified. It's one of the only reasons I think I'll watch that new Tarantino movie eventually.
It's also got Jim Gaffigan. I'm just curious how the hell he fits into this.
I'm
really curious about that. But, yeah, I mean, we have, you know, It Part 2 coming out, a movie called Freaks, which looks interesting. A movie, The Hunt, which looks like it could be kind of fun. Most Dangerous Game update.
Is Scary Stories too cheesy for you? Are you gonna watch it?
I'm probably gonna check it out. I mean,
I'm
you
gonna
know,
watch it.
I think I'll probably check it out. Zombieland Double Tap, which should be fun. Doctor Sleep, which you know.
The trailer to me didn't look appealing, but then I'm like, why am I watching trailers? Like, I need to stop watching trailers and just watch it. I'm gonna watch it anyway.
Yeah, Daniel Isn't Real sounds interesting.
Oh, I've heard of
that indie
one.
Horror. Huh. So yeah, there's definitely some things still to come out.
And I'm constantly playing catch up. I mean, Carrie and I both still want to see like Anna and the Apocalypse. I mean, I don't think this one's horror, but Under the Silver Lake.
Under the Silver Lake, absolutely, from late last year, Ghost Stories. Still haven't seen that. So there are a number that we have to see. So we'll try to catch up on all those so we can give you all of our picks from 2019 and the movies we loved or hated.
Yeah, but hopefully this recorded and we get it out there and then we start recording regularly.
I think it's good. I think, you know, there's been a lot of clamoring. There's been some Twitter online campaigns to get us back on the air, you know, to get us back recording. You know, Instagram is just on fire right now with the Where's My Bloody Horror Cast. So I think it's time that we have to appease. We have to appease our 15 to 20 listeners and get back out there because, you know, we have some things to talk about. So,
oh, another upcoming episode. Our friend Klon, who may be our only recurring guest, has watched all 13 Puppet Master movies.
Yep. So we're going to try to catch up as well and then all come together and talk about them. So that's a grueling journey that we're going to take into cinema hell. Watching all the Puppet Masters, but I think it might be the most important thing we ever do.
Agreed. I couldn't agree more.
Thank you for listening to this very lengthy episode, catch-up episode of ours. We hope you enjoyed it. Please reach out to us on Instagram, Facebook, anything like that. Let us know what you think. Let us know if there's something that you want to hear on a future episode.
Yeah.
A movie that she wants to watch so we can talk about.
I always want horror movie recommendations. Sorry, I don't want to keep dragging it out, but another thing is Carrie and I watched the movie Bad Dreams together, so there's so many movies we still
We're going to have to talk about Bad Dreams. That deserves some time. It is a lost gem from the 80s that we need to talk about. So we will do all this and more. We thank you so much for listening to My Bloody Horrorcast. We hope to see you next time.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Bye.